In all the group settings that are going on today, what is being discussed at any particular time is of no importance in the long run. The only thing that matters is everyone at the table is doing the process. One of the things we did when I was on the governance committee was we all sat in circles, just like the UN, by the way. Sat in circles. And if you ever stood up, you can have everybody on your side in a group, a facilitator in a group. I don't know how much you get into this. But if you have everybody in the group is on the side of the guy standing up, challenging the facilitator, and he won't sit down, he won't shut up. You know, and the facilitator is real nice, and if the guy happens to stand up and challenge the facilitator, if he happens to be just a little bit curt, the other people sitting in the group, their gut will start to knot. There's something in us, and this is one of the questions I have for God. This is probably my main question is, why, when somebody stands up, I'm on his side, why do I get this feeling in my gut like I wish he'd sit down and shut up? And when he finally sits down and shuts up, I feel better. Okay? And so even the people on your side will actually turn against you in a group. And the other side knows this. And I just can't figure out why God made us that way, but I'm not questioning God. I'd like to know. There's a word I like better, though it basically means the same thing, than consensus. Now, the word consensus, I don't know if you ever thought about it, means with sensuality. So you come to consensus, which basically means how you feel. And that would be satisfaction. So the goal is satisfaction. But it's so amazing to me that with this process, you can be dead wrong and feel good about it. Let me read John Dewey's definition of process. Natural science is forced by its own development to abandon the assumption of fixity and to recognize that what is for, that what oh, he writes weird. To recognize that for what it is actually, universal is process. So process is the universal thing. And so the UN united. Everything that talks about a united front is the united in process. That's it's all come down to process and the I keep thinking about the Unification Church and the Unitarian Church and all these different churches that are united. United Methodist Church. Actually, the word method in the United Methodist Church, the word method is just another word for process, so it's United Process Church. Yeah. I hope I didn't make anybody mad on that one. But actually, I can prove it. I got the book, so anyway. Yeah. And I grew up in a Wesleyan church, and I probably shouldn't get off on this, but Charles Wesley has quadrilateral, and number one was scripture and reasoning and anyways, there's two words I can't think of off the top of my head. Usually I do, but it boils down to reasoning, and if you really look at it, it's so dialectical. And in fact, if you look in the latest theology books now, they've kind of stayed away from in the earlier books, but they're getting more honest. And in fact, I just read a book that was written in 1989, and it said that the theology is paradoxical and existential, which is basically what quality means. You can never define quality is a really hard word to define. But if you go out and you try to buy a car and you look for different qualities in a car, if you ask the salesman what qualities you're looking for, if the guy was honest, when you said what quality you're looking for, and you say, I want one that gets 20 miles a gallon, he'd go, instead of saying, oh, I got one over here, he'd say, well, that's not a quality, it's a quantity, you know. Okay. Well, I want a blue one. I'm sorry. That can be defined quantitatively by wavelength, and so color is not really a quality. Anyway, so it's really hard to figure. This word quality, it's kind of a tough word, but anyway. But it boils down to you have choices on each side, and that's what the whole dialectic process is, to try to give you two choices, and then wherever you end up is an existential position. Now, the thing about your existential position, then as soon as you get some new information, then you get to move again. And so when they talk about the process, that's all it is. It's just everything is paradoxical, and because everything is paradoxical, you never get in a fixed position, and that's why the guys from the Frankfurt School left Germany. Because as soon as you pull the gun, it's not paradoxical and existential anymore. It's fixed and final because the guy's pointing a gun at you. It is interesting to see what is happening in the sciences. A friend of mine is the head of the math department at a Big 12 university. He is being forced to make the math department a TQM department. Now, total quality is equal to total no quantity. See, total quality, total no quantity. Am I saying that right? See, you can't, they are so diametrically opposed. You got quality, you have no quantity, you got quantity, you got no quality. Okay. A total quality quantity department is impossible. It's a classic oxymoron. He sent me a paper by the National Science Foundation that stated the NSF is going TQM. In fact, it was so cool. I mean, he's the head of a liberal university. And when I first started sharing this stuff with him, there's only one path, and the path is narrow, as you well know. And everything else is basically dialectical. And so I was explaining to him one day that there's four forces in the universe. I probably shouldn't get into all this stuff. But anyway, there's four forces in the universe. There's electromagnetics. There's strong and weak nuclear forces and gravity. There's only four forces in the universe. And so we would all agree that there is a fifth force in the universe, and it's the force that makes the other one go, and it happens to be the designer. You see what I'm saying? I mean, if you think about all the energy, I don't know if you have any idea how much energy there is in a molecule of stuff, but if you have a pretty crystal sitting on your desk, like a paperweight that might weigh, a pound or so, there's the nucleus of that thing is trying to fly apart. Because you got a bunch of protons in there, and they're all the same charge, and they're trying to get out. Well, there's something holding those things in. That's called the strong nuclear force. And that force is so strong that it would just crush those protons, but there's a counterbalancing force. There's a weaker nuclear force that keeps it up. But anyway, if all of the force, Einstein said, if you think of that formula, equals mc squared, you mentioned a little while ago, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. The big number is the speed of light. So you could have a small amount of mass, and the energy, because the speed of light, and think speed of light squared. Okay? So the energy has some mass times the speed of light squared. So if you have, Einstein said that there's enough energy in a tablespoon, about a thimbleful of matter, there's enough energy in the nucleus to destroy the Earth. I mean, that's a huge amounts of energy. Okay. Well, if that energy is all in there, there's got to be something. And the thing is, if the energy, if a strong nuclear force was ever to diminish just a little bit, that thing just flies apart. So somewhere there's an extension cord that all these protons have to be, all these nuclei have to be plugged into getting energy source, because, everything kind of run down sometime. So there's got to be a fifth force. And this will explain that. But so the fifth force, most everybody here would probably agree, the fifth force would have to be God. Well, the other slide has to have a fifth force. And I started looking for it, and guess what it is? It's actually, you're not going to believe it, you're going to think I've lost my head, but it's actually the force from yin and yang. That's the only explanation. There has to be a fifth force, because all the strong, is that, do I sound nuts now? And so anyway, so here's the head of the math at a major university, and when I talk about the four forces, and there has to be a fifth force, and he's going, yeah, I never thought of it before, it's got to be. And so anyway, he sent me a letter describing the National Science Foundation. He sent me a letter by the National Science Foundation saying that, and he wrote on it in his own handwriting, NSF, National Science Foundation, and Zen. Isn't that cool? That's a long story to say that dumb little thing. I'm sorry. I shouldn't do this. Evolution and the argument for evolution are both dialectical. Organisms supposedly change in leaps called punctuations due to environmental pressure. Lizards become birds. Our educational show recently, I just last week saw where supposedly an asteroid hit the Earth. There's proof, because the dinosaurs aren't here, good enough. The lizard, so here's how they did it. The asteroid hit the Earth, and the dinosaurs all died. And then because the dinosaurs all died, as a result of that, men were able to evolve in a punctuation. That makes sense, doesn't it? I understand. Oh, by the way, today, if you send your kids to the public school, or most Christian colleges, the biology departments are all based on the evolutionary model of slow, gradual changes over millions and millions of years. Stephen Jay Gould, I mean, he is, you know, there's always, the authorities are always they, you know, you get in a big argument, they say, you know, they, you know, nobody ever knows who they are. Well, they is Stephen Jay Gould. Stephen Jay Gould says that the oldest truth in all paleontology in the fossil records is that animals show up and are stable for millions of years. Well, I was taught continuous change. They're still teaching continuous change, but I mean the people at the top, nobody believes it. Absolutely nobody believes. And what they're thinking is that things happen quickly and abruptly. But somehow the environment puts pressure on organisms, and then all of a sudden it all the creatures have this kind of like a spring in them. And then you know, something happens like an asteroid, and all of a sudden all over the world you hear something go boing, and things change. That's the boing effect. You know, some people call it punctuation, some people call it boing. So it's interesting to note that the arguers for evolution use environmental pressure to win the argument. So this evolution is this funny thing, because not only is the evolution itself dialectical, in fact, I've got an article written back in the 1830s or 40s. Anyway, Karl Marx even wrote that nature is dialectical. So, but what's funny about evolution is dialectical, so is the argument for evolution is dialectical. And so my goal for being here today is to say, okay, when you're out just walking down the street and your kids come home from school and they'll say, Mommy, can I do this? And you'll go, that's dialectical. You know, we just need to recognize what the dialectical is. And that's actually what I have planned here. When there's a fork in the road, we need to recognize what's dialectical. And sometimes when I was in these meetings, I didn't always recognize that I was being manipulated. Sometimes it's kind of hard to know, realize it, because some of them are kind of fun, you know. They throw balls at you and all kinds of stuff. Anyways, so the IUs use a dialectic argument. They'll say things like, all true scientists believe this. I mean, it's kind of funny, because I got like 300 hours of biology, so I guess I'm not a true scientist. In fact, I know some guys who are scientists and only have 60 or 70 hours of biology. But they're true scientists, you know. And the other belief is religious. We must separate schools and religion. The point I'm trying to make is that the argument for evolution and the evolution itself are both dialectical. I strongly do not believe that we create anything. We can only observe and learn. I set out to prove that the stock market was dialectical, and I proved it. And so I went to Barnes & Noble one Saturday evening, and I bought six books. Somewhere in these six books, I'm going to find that the stock market is dialectical. I'm going to be able to prove it to anybody, because you can say it, but can you prove it? And I've got lots of friends that are stockbrokers, and a lot of times I don't read anything about the stock market, but I've said lots of stuff, and they go, oh, yeah, it makes sense. But anyway, so I got my six books, took five or six kids to a basketball game, got home, got the kids to bed. About 12 o'clock at night, I finally sat down in my chair where I read with these six books, and beside me, I'm going to prove once and for all that the stock market is dialectical. And on page 33, Peter Lynch, the number one money manager in the world, said, the stock market runs just like the ancient philosophers. They would argue for hours on how many teeth a horse had, dialogue, but no one would ever go and count the horse's teeth. That's how the stock market works. That's the number one guy. But what's happened is the stock market is just reacting to environmental pressure. This is a pro dental products report. And I'll close pretty much with this. I got a little bit more to go, but I just want to read what this dental products report says about posterior. They're talking about posterior back white fillings, the plastic fillings. And he's saying this man that does the study, he endorses university programs not only for their impartiality. You know, dental school, if they're teaching certain kinds of restorative materials, they probably even study it a lot. And he's talking about universities. Universities tend to promote materials that have been around for a long time. So while they may not be teaching techniques for working with the most recently introduced products, see, the most recently introduced products are probably products that shouldn't be used anyway, because, you know, they haven't been used yet. We don't know if they work or not. So naturally, the schools don't use products that just came out. The materials on which they do offer courses are clinically proven. Previously, all direct restoratives underwent clinical testing prior to being sold. The reality of the marketplace now prevents this, and the doctors who buy the new materials are actually doing the clinical testing. If the dentist buys the product again, the manufacturer keeps producing it. If no one buys it again, they make a new material. The interesting thing about this is the wave of the dental feature is cosmetic dentistry. And if you look in your phone books, I mean, I guarantee you they are full of half-page ads that probably cost $20,000 or $30,000 a year. But what's interesting is there's a book called Human Relations and Curriculum Change. One of the things that they talk about is how to use dissatisfaction. Even if you're satisfied, it's pretty easy to get you dissatisfied. In closing, I would like to say Galileo Boulevard is straight and narrow. Aristotle Boulevard, on the other hand, is big. In other words, Galileo is just a little bit. The arrows almost touch. Everything outside of that is Aristotelian. An Aristotle Boulevard puts you in control. You are on the pedestal. Dialectics and quality are based on questioning and creating your own wavering truth, paradoxicism, and existentialism. This is the whole and only purpose of group dynamics. Didactics and quantity are based on teaching, learning, testability, and self-consistency. Romans 12, 1-3 says it best, and I'll finish with this. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice. I explained this to my kids recently, and I said, a living sacrifice doesn't mean, you know, torture yourself, stick things under your fingernails and stuff like that. It means when you want to do something, you have to deny yourself of things of this world. Holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so what we're talking about then is there's two ways to think. And here, as straightforward as I of anything I've ever read in my life, is how to think. This is it. This is the other. And it's always simple. The dialectic, they try to make it confusing. They got all these different ways of doing it, but it always boils down to they create a paradox and get you to think existentially. That's their only goal. Here it is right here. For I say, through the grace given unto me. Did I say this is Romans? Okay. Romans 12. For I say, through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think himself more highly than he ought. So you have to keep yourself, your thought of yourself down. As soon as you put yourself on a pedestal, you become the creator. Not to think himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according to as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. Thank you.